here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I like sucking.
Put that dick in my ass.
Legit bat podcast.
I like China.
Oh, yeah.
You work with the retards.
Welcome to Costco. I love you.
Introducing your favorite retards, hobbits at a collective height of 5'3", Joe, Jen, and Ben.
Welcome back to Legit Bat. I'm Joe. Jen and Ben are not here tonight, but then we do have Brandon, my de facto co-host, as usual, stepping up to the plate. Brandon, how are you tonight?
What's up, dude? Every day above ground's a phenomenal day. I'd like to remind everybody out there to not listen to what's going on in the news. Good to see you guys.
Words of wisdom right there. We're doing a new thing. You might have heard the last couple episodes where listeners are sending in their intros to the shows. If you want to do that, email me at legitbatpod@gmail.com and be a part of the show. Today's was brought to you by Simon, all the way from the UK, and very well done on your English, or non-English, American English accent, dude, because I know how you actually sound. And he sounds very American in the intro, so well done. So if you guys want to do that, email me and do whatever. Our guest tonight, somebody who I've been trying to get on for about a year, we couldn't decide, year, maybe two, but Ryan Gable from The Secret Teachings, and we'll just head it off like right off the bat here, dude. I know we're going to be a little bit pressed for time later, but I've listened to several of your shows, but the one I was listening to today was the Paradox of Female Predators you did like 2 days ago. And wow, if nobody's listened to that one, go check it out. It's very offensive to some people, not to listeners of this show or, you know, Brandon's, but or even Ryan's, but you hit the nail on the head there with a lot of the things you said. And I know most thinking females are not going to find it offensive, or males, unless you're a beta cuck, which I don't know why you're listening to these shows if you are. But what I wanted to kind of, you know, springboard off of that was something stuck out, I think, in the second hour where you're talking about not being able to label you specifically because you don't really fit into a box of all these two-party paradigms or I'm this or I'm that. And it's funny because people are going to label you like that anyway. So if you say one thing against Democrats, you're automatically a MAGA Trumper. We've covered this a million times. If you say something against Donald Trump, then you must be voting for Kamala. And that's just how people sort things in their minds. And it's wild to me. How would you describe that for yourself? I know you did it on your show, but do it for our audience. Like, what? How do you describe yourself as unlabelable? Because I think a lot of our listeners can understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me on the show. It has been, I think, well, we'll meet in the middle and say a year and a half of trying to prep and get a show going. And since I am a little bit long-winded, please feel free to cut me off because we're limited on time. So I would say to answer your question, I don't like making things about myself, despite the fact that people sometimes interpret it that way. I use myself as an example. Sometimes I embarrass myself on my show because I'm very directly honest with how I actually feel, and I'm not playing a part. I'm just as much myself off the air as I am on the air, same exact person. I say the things on air that I say in person, so I end up in a lot of arguments with people in real life, and I've been banned from a lot of places in real life, restaurants, stores, people's houses, because I just, I don't know. It doesn't make me a special person. Other people are like that too. And I'm not trying to be some renegade. I'm just saying that I think that it's okay and acceptable. I'm trying to, I guess, in a sense, be an example to people, especially in radio, because I've done this for like 15 years, that it's okay to say things that go against even what the alternative media or so-called independent thinkers say and believe. Like, I'll give you an example. I hear a lot of stuff about the Olympics, and everybody's interpretation is valid, some far more than others. But everybody looks for, in the alternative media, they look for some Illuminati satanic imagery. And people say, well, those were the horses of the apocalypse at the Olympics, the silver horse on the river and the white horse with the wings. And I just looked at it and thought, I don't think that those are the horses of the apocalypse. And immediately people labeled me as basically being part of the mainstream. You're denying that they use symbolism. And I was thinking, I've done this for 15 years before a lot of people ever talked about stuff like that. And suddenly I'm with the mainstream because I don't think that it's the horses of the Book of Revelation.
They got to you, bro. You're a shill now.
I'm all paid off. So that's one example. And the female paradox show, I do 5 shows a week, and I do so many shows. Actually, somebody messaged me the other day and they said, I like that show you did on, I forget, Golden Juice. And I was like, Golden Juice? What is Golden Juice?
What, 6 months ago or something?
Yeah, it was like last October. And I forgot that I did it. So I do, because I do so many, so I don't even remember. But I do a lot of shows. So if someone hears a show and they assume something about me, that becomes, just like with anybody else, your show, anybody else's show, that becomes your identity until they listen more and hear another point of view, perhaps. But I do so many shows, I try to look at every subject from multiple angles. And then sometimes I'll do 2 or 3 sort of related shows over a couple of weeks. They'll kind of tie together, kind of be updates to something we talked about. And on those shows, I'll maybe sometimes take a more strong stance in one direction as opposed to the other direction for any issue. And I think my audience, generally speaking, has a lot of intelligence. So they're very aware of that. But when you have people coming in and out, what they're hearing is exactly what you said. If I make a statement like, well, I don't like Kamala Harris. Oh, you must be one of us. You must be a Trump supporter. You're on our side. You're on our team. And then if I say, well, Trump did sell weapons to the Saudis, and he did want to put Julian Assange in prison, and he also did some other stuff I don't agree with. And then I had someone, well, actually have someone consistently telling me, screaming at me, capital letters and email and on my Spreaker page, that I must be some sort of, I'm someone who has Trump derangement syndrome. And so, like that show I did on the female predators, I did have one woman freak out on me. She apparently didn't listen to the show, because the show was about a topical story of mayor who, this is a female, a mayor. She was, I think she's late 30s, early 40s, maybe 42. And she, and this is where things get tricky, she molested a young boy. Now, I've read different stories and they have different reports of how old the boy was. You know, if someone was 16 years old, I mean, a young 16-year-old boy having sex with a teacher or the mayor is interpreted much differently than a 16-year-old girl having sex with a 42-year-old mayor. Our society views that differently. And even though the boy might be into it, you know, ultimately, is he into it because he's into it, or is he into it because society says, that's cool, buddy, that's cool, you slept with an older woman? And the same thing with women. Are women really opposed to it? Because I got to be honest with you, of all the women I've ever dated, which is not a lot, but a handful, maybe like half a dozen or so, all of them have had very dark, deep fantasies of like some nasty stuff that I would never agree to in an intimate relationship. So it's like, do those women actually not want that? Or does society say you don't want to have sex with an older man? So I look at things like that and try to look at both sides of the spectrum and try to approach a subject like that, which is a very, like, as you said, it's very offensive to a lot of people. But also I'm not trying to take the approach, and I commented on this on the show, you might remember I said something about the red pill movement. I'm also not a part of that personally. You guys might disagree. That's okay. I don't like Andrew Tate. I didn't even know what the red pill movement was until, I swear to God, like a month ago, someone said, you must be into that red pill stuff. And I said, what's, you mean like Matrix red pill? I thought that was a colloquial term that people used in the alternative media. I didn't realize that was some male man masculine movement.
So
I
I
didn't
had no
know.
idea. It was like, I heard you say that too, and especially in relation to Andrew Tate. And I don't know much about the dude, but he seems like kind of a piece of shit to me. A lot of things he says
Yeah. Yeah.
is fine, but it's not something anybody else hasn't said 100 times anyway. But I hate those terms too, the Red Pill movement or the Truther podcast.
Yes.
I don't like it. And if you want to call me that again, sure, whatever, fine, I'm that. But I always say that saying that you're a truther infers that you have the truth and you're letting people know about it. And that is absolutely not what I'm doing. I'm talking out my ass about things that I think. I know Brandon is too. He would never, I don't think, classify himself as a truther. So for people to label you like that, and this is pretty much all going to be about that exact thing, is people putting you in a box of what they think you are based on maybe one thing that you said. And it drives me absolutely nuts. And by the way, if you want to send hate mail, send it to Ryan, or you can send it to me too. I feed your hate sustains me, but it drives me nuts because, like you said, the few people that get pissed off about it are the people that take one thing out of context and then decide to go balls out and comment on YouTube or whatever else, or email you directly and go off about it. And it's like, you're missing the whole context of what I said. These
Yeah.
are the same people that look at the news or anything, or a Joe Rogan clip, and automatically pigeonhole these people into, it must be that because that's how I think. Open your fucking minds and think about it for more than a second. Maybe listen to another 16 hours of what Ryan has to say, or Brandon, or me, and maybe you'll get an actual picture of what we're talking about.
Yeah, I think a good example of this, I could give actually a bunch of examples of this, but a good example would be maybe a couple small examples. If we're looking at something like climate change or vaccines or whatever the story might be, you get this argument, climate change is real. And people that disagree with it will say, well, I don't think it's climate change. I think it's all geoengineering, and it must all be directed energy weapons. And then you say, well, maybe not. Like, yeah, those things are real. You can read about them on Lockheed Martin's website, Raytheon's website, Boeing's website, but that
Even
doesn't mean
Wikipedia.
anywhere pretty much there's an official or unofficial. DEWs have been acknowledged for a very long time, right? And they're different kinds of weapon systems, disabling electronics. But people say, well, those things exist, so that must be what caused the fire. That's what caused the hurricane. And it's like, well, yeah, weather control technology separate of DEWs has been in development for decades. That doesn't mean that that's what caused the storm. It's like nothing can be natural anymore. It's the same thing with vaccines and viruses. Everything's COVID. The people that said we don't believe the COVID story, we don't believe that that COVID is making us sick, we think that the vaccine's going to kill everybody. So it's either COVID's going to kill you or the vaccine's going to kill you. Now, the vaccine, certainly Pfizer tried to hide the side effects for 75 years, and there were lots of them, Guillain-Barré syndrome, myocarditis, just like with DEWs, very real. But people are also sick long before COVID. We have like 700,000 people a year in the US die. About 80% of those 800,000, this is for heart disease, about 80% are totally preventable with lifestyle changes, according to the World Heart Federation, the CDC. But
Same with
nobody wants,
diabetes.
same with diabetes, same 40 plus percent with cancer. But it seems like no one wants to discuss that because, just like with everything else, if it's not climate change or DEWs, if it's not a virus or a vaccine, nothing can happen naturally. The wind doesn't blow without a weapon system activating it or without some kind of man-made climate change. And of course, you don't get sick unless it's caused by a virus that you can't see or a vaccine that someone else got that shed on you. And these are the same kinds of problems we have with, I think, with that red pill movement. The red pill movement, I think, is another version of feminism. And I'll explain to you what I mean by that. I don't mean some masculine, feminine promotion. I mean, what does the red pill movement teach you? When I looked into what it actually was, it teaches you get a house, nice car, a lot of money, build yourself up. Now, there's nothing wrong with building yourself up, but if you're talking about physical, material things, and then maybe that'll attract the women or whatever that you want. Well, it sounds the same thing like feminism promoted. It's like women go to work, be
Sounds more like a
independent.
blue pill to me.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like a blue pill, but it's all pro not that I'm against capitalism, but it's promoting materiality. It's the male version of feminism. And it's the same people, I think, promoting it and advocating for it. I'll give you another quick example. I don't know if you heard me talk about this, but if you look at the Democrat Party receives over half, this is official, half of their money comes from the Israeli lobby. but they're supposedly opposed to Israel. Now, just that on the surface is suspicious, but when you learn that their main policies with Kamala Harris and just Democrats in general are immigration, they are LGBTQ rights, and abortion. And those are the three major policies of the state of Israel. Tel Aviv is the gay capital, LGBTQ capital of the world. That illegal immigration is being run in from South and Central America into the US and into the UK and most of Europe by a Jewish group called HIAS, HIAS. And it strictly says in the Talmud that Gentiles are dirty and filthy, and you can kill Gentiles, and it's not a sin. And abortion was a big part of what the Jews were accused of in the Bible, in the book of Acts. That's why God shunned them and said, you don't worship Rimfam or Moloch, which is where the Canaanite gods. So this is all part of the Democrat Party platform. They're supposedly opposed to Israel, but they promote all the things that the Talmudic Israeli establishment promotes. They get half their money from them. There's just so many things like that where you think that you're taking like an alternative point of view and you're like you're independently thinking, but it's really just some kind of, I would call it a second net. You think you escaped the first one, you're like, oh, I'm free of the mind control. No, you're not. You just got scooped up by the second net that came in while you were disoriented from the first net. That's how I
Dude,
look at it.
that's so funny that you bring that up because we actually just did a show last night that I put out about inadvertently, but it still was. It was about a certain group of people who have a certain set of beliefs, and it seems to be taking over the whole world. And you're anti-Semitic if you think that that's true. So it's funny that you bring that up. But yeah, it does seem like when you're talking about how, the wind can't blow, otherwise it's, weather manipulation or that whole thing. The truth always seems to be in the middle somewhere.
It really
And
does.
people like to plant themselves on one side or the other because it's comfortable, because there's more people in that area. So the center view, or I even hate calling it centrist, but just the view that let's take all perspectives and maybe look at everything instead of just planting our foot and digging our heels on one side or the other. Why don't you look at the other side? I look at the other side all the time as it is. It's there's truth, it seems. There's jigsaw puzzles everywhere. I think you brought that up too, kind of like some puzzle pieces and all that. But it's hard to figure out, especially in the information age, because there's so much what you would call misinformation, but there really is. It's just who's judging what's misinformation and what's not. I had something somewhere else I was going with that. Brandon, take over. Save me, bro. I'll come back when my brain stops farting.
I want to know about this gold juice. Brian, do you remember it now? Episode October of last?
I believe it was October of last year.
Okay.
Yeah, it actually might have something to do with what you were just alluding to there. The gold juice. I have to look the exact show date up here.
Wait, gold juice or gold juice?
I
Fair
would like
question.
clarification, please.
Yes. Gold juice. The gold juice.
He just
What
has
is
a
the name of
lisp.
that chick on Whitney Cummings? She was in some movies. I don't know. Anyway, an actress, she was talking about, oh, I didn't take the gold juice and drink
That's
gold juice. Is that
it.
the
Yeah,
same
that's
thing?
yeah, and I was looking up on my show description. So this is from November, actually, November of last year, and it was Taryn Manning.
Okay,
Manning,
yeah.
yeah. And she said she was offered the golden, this was my show description. Actress Taryn Manning said she was recently offered golden juice for fortune and fame, and that refusal of the substance could lead to aggressive harassment by the Hollywood machine. Those that do drink it, she says, have this not metaphoric, but a literal outward physical and emotional change that's very noticeable in their behavior, which kind of sounds like if you ever watched American Horror Story when they take the pills and then they have to drink the blood and all that. It kind of sounds like that, season 10 of American Horror Story. But once you step beyond maybe the metaphor of it's kind of like the ambrosia. It's like I called my show Black Ambrosia, which makes you immortal, but only in the illusory world. So it kind of extends the death of your soul permanently. It's basically selling your soul to the devil in a sense.
Sounds like some
So,
vampirism type of idea.
yeah,
Yeah,
some real shit where it gets in you and takes over a little bit.
and apparently it's not just symbolic in Hollywood. It's quite real according to her. And she's not the only one. There are a lot of people, maybe they don't call it golden juice, but there are a lot of Hollywood folks that have made similar claims, or they, for whatever reason, I don't really think it's publicity, or but for some reason there are quite a few of them that openly talk about or openly display their infatuation with human blood. I mean, from Billy Bob Thornton to what was the
Machine
girl's
Gun
name?
Kelly.
Machine Gun Kelly, Megan Fox was his was a, her his girlfriend, Megan Fox.
Megan Fox. I think some of that too is just like shock jock type of shit. I don't know how much to believe of what they actually do. It's like, are you doing a thing right now, or do you actually do
Well,
that? I can see both ways.
yeah. Well, see, that's a que that's another thing on my show. I've talked about that for years. I really don't. I mean, I've talked about that for 15 years. I really don't know, but I've come to, I would say, a partial conclusion that it feels like, yeah, it's sort of shock value, like something, you know, Kiss did something with blood and an album, I think, and Tony Hawk did that with a skateboard, and a lot of that's sort of just for publicity and shock. Like Marilyn Manson is shock value, you know.
Marketing.
The band Ghost, I like the band Ghost, their shock value and their satire too. But when you get people that are in Hollywood and they all do the same thing for shock value, you would think that these great entertainment minds would come up with something different for shock value. I mean, what do they have? Sex tapes and wearing blood from other celebrities? Like, I don't, when it's such a consistent pattern, my partial conclusion is that it's not just symbolic. It's probably kind of like Marina Abramović said. She said, when we do this art in private, it's not art anymore. It's real magic. When we do it in public, for the public, when people can see it, then it's just a performance art.
Right. And what we always tell people too is with this kind of weird occult like ritual type things that people do, and the alleged, blood stuff that be in the art thing is one thing. Modern art disgusts me. It's so stupid and I don't like any of it basically. But like she said, when they're doing it in private, it is real. And it doesn't really matter if the majority of the population believes it is or not, because they do. And intention creates reality, if you want to believe in all that stuff too. So whatever they're doing is doing something. Look at the world. Something's happening. I don't know whether it's Marina Abramović or somebody else, but somebody's pulling some strings here, and it's not necessarily natural or, human. So.
I agree with you, and I think that I remember Bill Cooper said that the state of Israel was formed in order to, I guess, in a very symbolic way, but kind of bring about the perception of Armageddon and the end of the world. And I've thought about how many Christians are in the world and how many Muslims are in the world, because they believe virtually the same thing, with the exception that Muslims just don't believe Jesus was the actual Son of God. A lot of that's metaphoric too, because some Muslims do believe that, but it's in a symbolic way. But there's about 4.5 billion Christians and Muslims collectively. More than half the planet is Christian and Islamic. So that means, and the Muslims also have Al-Dajjal, the Antichrist. So they believe in pretty much the same thing. So that means that half the world plus believes in those symbols and those stories. They probably interpret them in vastly different ways. But kind of like Cortez did, if you play on those religious themes and those religious ideas, which the Windsor family very clearly does, even see the Olympic organizers playing on those themes in Paris. I mean, at the very minimum, it's going to have an effect on the subconscious, even if you're not aware of what it is. But
Right.
especially when it's really obvious, like when they're making things so obvious. There's a book, actually I have a book right here. This guy, Tim Cohen, wrote this book called The Antichrist and a Cup of Tea. And he was one of the first ones to point out that King Charles's, his flag, his logo is the red dragon, and it says in another language, the red dragon gives the lead, which is a reference to Revelation, and the red dragon gives the beast his throne, which would be in this case probably William. Will or Bill is an old name for the devil. Prince William has a scar like the beast. He survived. He almost died. He had this head wound, just like the beast in Revelation. And now he said this year that he will not be participating in the Church of England when he becomes king. He wants nothing to do with the church. Like, they're very clearly creating this image of the ascension of the Antichrist. And I think that the same thing is happening with the Olympics. The same thing happens with like Kamala Harris. I mean, my God, the chances of her name meaning what it means at the time in which she comes to perceptual power. I don't know if you heard my show on this, but
Dude, I
Kamala
did. I actually
is
wanted to bring
crazy.
that up too. The what was it? The what language was it that you were digging that up from? Was it
Sanskrit.
Sanskrit? Okay, yeah. So go into that a little bit and tell us about Kamala's name. Camel toes.
So she has a Hindu mother. Her mother was Hindu. And so Hinduism is probably, say, one of the, it's certainly the oldest, let's say, for lack of a better word, institutional religions. And it's probably older than any kind of institutionality, if I can use that word. I made that word up. Hinduism is very, very old. Sanskrit's one of the oldest languages. So her name means, Kamala means lotus flower. Or there's another meaning in Sanskrit, just like every language, there's different meanings to words and names. The other meaning is pale red. Her middle name is Devi, and Devi, which could also, if in English, you could play around with it and say it's short for devil. But Devi is a goddess in Hinduism, and she is often linked with Lakshmi, who is the lady in red, who is basically the goddess of wisdom. She's the
Scarlet
Hindu.
Woman, yeah.
Yes, and she's the Hindu version of Athena or Minerva or the owl at Bohemian Grove. So that's Lakshmi. But Devi in the at the end of the world. So you look at Hinduism, this is important to, I think, to understand. You have Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And a lot of people are like, Shiva, there's a Shiva statue at CERN. And Oppenheimer was obsessed with Sanskrit and the Bhagavad Gita and quoting the destroyer Shiva. And that's all true. There's a huge Hindu influence in government and science, etc. But if you have Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, you have the creator, you have the preserver, and you have the destroyer. But if you take out the preserver and the creator, Brahma and Vishnu, then you just get the destroyer. And in the case of Kamala Harris, her name in Sanskrit would actually translate to the pale red goddess of, you read about Devi. Devi is a goddess of, well, she's a goddess of beauty, but she's also a goddess of destruction. And at the end of the world, when Shiva is dancing and doing his dance, Devi is there laughing and dancing with him. And she's bathing in the blood of an elephant, which is interesting because of the Republican Party logo, right? And so Kamala Harris is the pale red goddess of destruction. And while in the overseas in France, where they're passing the torch to Marianne, which is the Olympic logo. It's meant to be the goddess of liberty, the French version. They pass the torch to Marianne the same week, like within the same 72-hour period, Joe Biden says, I'm passing the torch to Kamala Harris, another version of the goddess. And if you look at, well, you look at Revelation as you're referring to, I'm guessing that's what you're referring to, the Red Lady. The whore of Babylon, who's drunk on the blood of the followers of Christ. Well, hell, what in context with that, what did you see at the opening ceremony? I'm not opposed to Dionysus or Bacchus. I see it as being far more scientific than I see it as being. It's a description of how alcohol is processed by the body, the story of Dionysus and the alchemical transforming of wine into, or grapes into wine, water into wine, which is what Jesus did as well.
And
But
wine
the.
into a great fucking time.
And that's that great time, that Dionysian symbol is can be seen as that element of chaos. So you're passing the torch to this chaos, to this inversion of, in my opinion, with the Olympics, especially this inversion of femininity. And they had the goddess everywhere. They had Celine Dion performing on the Eiffel Tower. Under her was the moon, and like the actual moon in between the Olympic rings. You had the Seine River. Seine River is personified by the goddess Sequana, and she
And
is
it's full of
person.
poo-poos right now, too.
Yeah, so it's filthy, right? It's E. coli. It's filthy. It's polluted, and that's the point. I'm glad you said that because that the point is they're not passing the torch to the female in some feminist political way. It's passing the torch to the Scarlet Woman, the perverter Lilith Lamashtu, without any opposing polarity, which means that Lilith is the goddess of abortion and the temptation of men.
The mother of succubi,
She's the mother of succubi.
the list goes
Yes.
on, yeah.
So that's what they're, that seems to be what they, by they, I mean, clearly the Olympic organizers, many members of the U.S. government, I like to try to define who they are when we say they clearly are using that imagery. I mean, they even had a giant statue of Isis, the Egyptian goddess, in the freaking river, on top of having the gray horse, which was ridden by Sequana, the moon goddess, or the river goddess, but the moon at the games.
Yeah, the only contention I would have is that Kamala as a goddess, maybe the goddess of retards. That's about the only, like, they chose her as this symbol. Like, vessel. I mean, assuming all this, okay, vessel, sure. So she's going to have to turn a corner really quick for people to actually, like, vote for her, do whatever, you know, fucking earth things people do. But she's probably the dumbest person I've ever seen in politics. And that's really saying something over the last, you know, few decades I've been alive. It's amazing.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50. In order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
I thought AOC had the crown.
No.
And then Kamala came in and just blew AOC away.
She grabbed that crown and stuck it right up her cooch and was like, this is mine now.
Kamala is, she makes AOC look very, very smart. But I think that what Kamala is, and this is sort of, I think, maybe one of the underlying themes, is that these people are vessels for the, so like in witchcraft or in Wiccanism, and there is a difference. There's a famous book written about this too. It's called Drawing Down the Moon. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes.
Drawing down. So in simple terms, drawing down the moon is a ritual by which you draw down the essence of the feminine qualities of the moon into the...
Isn't that the dude that started Wicca? I can't remember his name. It starts with a G, maybe?
I think a woman wrote that book.
Oh, okay. No, I was talking about the creator of Wicca. I can't remember his name now. I'd have to look it up. I'm not doing that. So
I don't know the name of the creator. I know that I think the book was written by a woman. I can't remember. I don't have it here in my library of books, but
that's a very famous book though in witchcraft circles.
Yes. So they draw down the moon, the essence of the goddess, if you will, into the woman in the coven. If you read the witch's Bible, it's an earth-based practice. It's not demonic. And they, you know, the man is the green man. Takes on the persona of the green man. The woman takes on the persona of the moon. Then they have intercourse. And actually in the witch's Bible, they talk about when they have intercourse, it's not like some weird orgy in front of everybody else. They do it in private. And the other members of the coven also do it in private. So there's some misconceptions about witchcraft and Wicca.
Well, isn't that the great work too? Isn't that covered in a lot of like occult religions? Like the great work is basically boinking your priestess or whatever. And
that's actually an interesting point you bring up, because there's vast interpretations that could be had of this. I mean, if you just look at sex as sex, it could be seen as dirty, animalistic, perverse. But when you add in the element of connectivity and spirit and all that, then it's a connection to source, a connection to God. They say the orgasm is like heaven. So there's perverted animalistic sex, and then there's more sacred divine sex.
And what have we seen lately? A lot of perverted, weird shit going on.
Total perversion. No doubt about it. And that's everywhere, which is also, you know, there's another thing too. That is, I mean, here, I'll show you this. For people on video, this is a very famous, I think it's a famous book called Gay Berlin. You read that book, it'll tell you all about how in the 1920s, Berlin, like Tel Aviv is today, Berlin was the gay capital of the world.
Faggots.
They had all these movements and groups and organizations that promoted the most obscene, disgusting, perverse material, pornography to children, all the smut and the garbage in the media and the entertainment industry. Which, if you read Mein Kampf, Hitler was originally writing about the kind of garbage that was happening in Berlin, and the people in Berlin started to rebel against it in the 1920s.
Reminiscent of Sodom and Gomorrah, from what I remember, that was the real problem in Sodom and Gomorrah, was that exact type of thing.
And God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, right? And that's the story anyway, and that's what we see in Germany in the 20s. I mean, we saw that in Russia too, just not as, I don't think it was as bad. But now we're seeing the exact same thing today. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you heard my other show I did about this, but if you look at the history of it, I'll keep this very brief. I mean, the German people in the early 30s largely voted for Hitler because he was pro-German. Germany was still reeling from the end of the First World War. They had been economically, culturally, socially, and in every way, shape, and form destroyed throughout the 20s into the 30s. The German people were a lot of homelessness, a lot of inflation, degrading of the family and all that. And if you read the Holocaust encyclopedia, they openly admit in the encyclopedia that, yeah, Hitler never had a plan to kill Jews. That didn't come about till way later. Originally, what they were doing were rounding up communists, and they were forcing Jews, who really were mostly illegal immigrants out of Eastern Europe, that refused to assimilate, because there were lots of Jews living there prior that were fine, but these were illegal immigrants mostly, and Hitler tried to force them to leave, or he encouraged them, and then they refused to leave. He tried to force them, they refused to leave, so then they started putting them and communists, who both illegal immigrants and communists were primarily Jewish. There are scholars that point this out, both Jewish and non-Jewish, and so then later it eventually was, well, we're going to put these people in transitory camps. Then you have the winter, then you have the cutting off of supply lines, then you have work facilities and a lot of hard conditions, including for people that were also working there, not just imprisoned or being moved through this camp system. And then a lot of people died. So the Encyclopedia of the Holocaust is one of many sources that acknowledges that point. And our history books don't really tell us that. They're telling us a fabricated story. My point is, what's happening then is happening now with illegal immigration. It's happening now with the perversity in the guard. It's the same story, just on a loop.
Yeah. And I love how you brought up, I think it was on that one I was listening to today, about how everybody points to the Holocaust, you know, 6 million Jews, such an atrocity, and then you point out that 9 million Ukrainians were killed by the Soviets, and however many millions killed by Mao's dynasty, and all these things. What is, besides what, you know, normal stereotypes would point to, why is it that they point to the Holocaust as like the worst atrocity in history when there's so many other ones you could point to as well?
Well, if you read Norman Finkelstein, who I have his book here for viewers too, it's a Jewish.
That sounds
author.
Like a Jew.
Oh, very okay. Jewish. Norman Finkelstein. He wrote The Holocaust Industry. It's a smaller book. It's very concise though, and he talks in that book about how it wasn't until like the 1960s during the Six Days War that when Israel, the state, proved to be a very strong political and military ally of the United States, or at least they proved that they were strong enough to sustain themselves. So the U.S. saw them as an ally in the Middle East, and they made this kind of, you know, agreement with Israel. And he says around that time, it was like the early mid 60s, that's when you first started hearing about the Holocaust. And like late 60s, early 70s, it started to be turned into movies and documentaries and museums and, you know, remember, because they needed some emotionally driven justification for why the United States would be in support of this very teeny tiny Middle Eastern country, other than the obvious, which was the military power. And really, I mean, Israel is kind of like a satellite state of the United States in a lot of ways. So it wasn't until around that time, Norman Finkelstein says that this is around the time we start to hear a lot about the Holocaust. And prior to that, it was, for the most part, almost non-existent. As a matter of fact, if you look up Chicago Tribune 1990s Auschwitz death toll, back in the, I think it was 1992, they changed the death toll at Auschwitz. It's not 4.5 or 5 million. It's closer to like 2 or 2.5 million. And it wasn't just Jews. It was other people that were at Auschwitz. And most Auschwitz was two things. It was a work camp where they made rubber, and it was also a facility where a lot of very sick people got taken. There's two different camps. And so a lot of sick people, higher death rate. And when they cut off supply lines to Auschwitz, no Zyklon B, nothing to de-louse the clothing from the typhus, which the Auschwitz website admits. They even talk about typhus on their website and say,
wait, Auschwitz has a website? What
yeah,
is
they
it?
They have a website. You just type
is
in Auschwitz.
Auschwitz.meinkampf?
It's Auschwitz / chosen people. I forget. I think it's Auschwitz.com.org. It's probably .org. I could send you the link.
.gov?
The link. Let's see. Auschwitz. It's probably saved on my computer here.
Well, even that number, like I have a couple friends, shout out Corey Hughes from bloodyhistory.substack.com. He delves into a lot of this stuff, and he would contend that that number that they give of the amount of people that were slaughtered during the Holocaust is provably not true, just by math. It's math itself. And if you want to trust the experts and trust math, look at this math, because it doesn't make sense with the amount of people they say died in that time frame or were cremated or gassed or whatever. It doesn't make any sense. I'm not saying I'm a Holocaust denier. That's, again, people jump to one thing. You say this isn't true, so you must be a Holocaust denier. No, that's not what I'm saying. Look into the math of it. It doesn't make fucking sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. And there's two interesting things that you could look at to prove that. One, there are newspaper articles from the 30s around the time Hitler took power where international Jewish organizations and groups were calling. You could just type this into even a Google search will pull up these news articles and pull up the photographs. There were massive boycotts of Germany and massive boycotts of German products. This was before anything happened in Germany that would be considered quote unquote anti-Semitic. The Jews were boycotting Germany long before there were any Jews that were rounded up. So there was motivation by the average German, at the very least, who did riot, which is what the Night of Broken Glass was about 5 years after the Jews declared war on Germany. But the other thing is, if you look at those newspaper clippings, one of them in particular that says Judea declares war on Germany, there's a notation of a very certain number of Jews in Germany, and it's nowhere near 6 million. I mean, there's no possible way 6 million Jews could have been killed. Even in the German records of the Wannsee Conference, there aren't enough Jews in the Reich to, if they killed all of them, then there wouldn't have been anybody to claim reparations. First of all, after the fact that if they killed all of them, like there shouldn't be anybody in Israel. There weren't that many Jews in the Reich. So yeah, you're right. The statistics don't add up. And there's documented evidence from that time period. Plus I've seen there are encyclopedic entries going back to the early 20th century where they note there are different notes of Jewish persecution in other countries. I think it was in Russia, because there was anti-Semitic laws in Russia before the turn of the 20th century, 19th, 20th century. And there were claims that the Russians had gone after 6 million Jews. For some reason, that 6 million number, I don't know if it's psychology or what it is, but it's been used over and over again. But the, and the thing is, though, tons of
it
Jews
sounds like
killed.
Some NLP. You talked about that
kind
too,
of,
some
yeah.
neuro-linguistic programming where you repeat it enough times and it just gets embedded in the subconscious. That's what it sounds like to me.
It is, and it's like that big lie. You just repeat it, repeat it, repeat it, repeat it, and people believe it. And it, I mean, it's kind of like I forget where I heard that. Maybe it was, I don't know if it was Seinfeld or some sitcom. Oh, I know what it was. It was Curb Your Enthusiasm. With Larry David, and he said, "You don't, you know, you don't say if you're trying to get out of something, you don't say, you know, like my brother, or my dad, or something died. You got to say like my cousin died or something. You got to make it sound real, you know. You got to make it seem like you, why would he lie about that?
Yeah, because you wouldn't be so sad about your cousin, so you can pawn that off pretty easy. If it was your dad, you got to really get some acting skills on, some fake tears. Yeah,
yeah. It was. I forget the exact joke, but it was something like that. And that's totally. I think that's kind of what it is with the 6 million. It's a little more. It's not too many. It's not too little. It's like a three bear situation. I don't know exactly why. I mean, I've seen people go back and do full historical reviews of this, of specifically the number. But if you look in Russia, I mean, the Soviets, which were like 70 to 80% Jewish at the top, they killed Jews. They killed a lot of Jews. They killed Muslims, Christians. They killed everybody because they hated God. The God couldn't be above the state. So they killed a lot of people. I mean, yeah, you referred to Mao. Mao killed 65 to 80 million, 45 of those million from starvation and just denying that people were starving, which is a lot of what we see today. We deny that prices go up. We deny that there's a stock market crash. We deny that there's anything such as inflation. We deny. Kamala Harris was never the border czar. That's exactly what Mao and his cronies did in China. They ignored that people were starving to death. The party's always right. The people are always wrong.
The Ministry of Truth knows what's best. By the way, Brandon just sent me, it's Auschwitz.org/EN. So if anybody's interested in going and looking at that, but yeah, dude, I don't, where do you want to go with this, Brandon? I'll let you take over real quick. Cause I got to do, take a piss real quick. So you do your thing and I'll go pee pee.
Can I share screen?
Yeah.
Dope. Okay. So check this out, buddy. I was, going to button up a couple of things here.
Let's do it.
Okay, so let's close an open tab from earlier. Gerald Gardner is the guy that founded Wicca.
Oh, that's right. Gardner, okay.
Yeah, born in 84. Look at this wicked looking dude here. He inspired The Witch and the Broom, I suppose, which is fascinating. Now, another thing that I really pay attention to, and I don't know if you're the same way, Ryan, is I pay attention to names. When we're talking about Israel, I think it's fascinating, of course, founded in 1948, so it wasn't real until then. And then what's fascinating is it's an anagram of is real, right? Like they're trying to convince us that this thing is really real, guys. It's a real thing. And then when you look up the etymology of rail, right? The end of it here is just to be. It's here. It's very easy. It's just to being or a thing. That's the etymology of is, right? But if you look at rael, right? Then this is a variant of Rael, which is someone who is as innocent as a lamb, who's also another, it would also include definitions of well-advised, free-spirited, or just or fair. But I think it's interesting, again, just the name is kind of on the nose. It is Rael. They're like trying to really overtell you, oh, it's real, it's real.
We are and then, pure and innocent.
Yeah, so what do you think of that? Just sort of that interpretation.
I've actually never heard that before, but you know, it's very clear from what you're showing me there and what you're saying. That's a very interesting interpretation. What it reminds me of is there's an sort of an esoteric metaphysical way to interpret Israel. And that is that it is a shortened version of Is, Ra, and El, or Isis, Ra,
yep.
and Elohim, which I mean, in a way, if that's how you see it, it could be that, but I've never seen this interpretation, Israel. And that's very interesting because Israel, the Israeli government, certainly acts like they are innocent as a lamb, that they are always well-advised, free-spirited. They're always just and fair. I mean, that is the epitome of how the Israeli government functions and operates. So That's a very, very fa I didn't know that. That's a very fascinating point. And it's right there in front of us, Israel. I've looked at the name a million times and never noticed Israel.
You know what it is, buddy? I don't know if you've noticed it too. There's sort of a spiritual component to all of this. I think we all have locks and keys for each other. Like I've got a bunch of like we're all wearing these metaphoric locks, right? And you've got yours, I've got mine, right? But we each have a set of keys as well. This like big janitor type ring of keys, right? And I think that we just sort of unlock things in each other, proximity, conversation, whatever. I never even thought about it until you guys were talking about it. When you said is real, and then you said
And
something
then you
earlier
heard
about it not
Israel.
being real, I heard is real. I was like, oh my God, it's sort of just really on the nose. Like when I had Howdy Mikowski on, I was like, how do we know you're not full of shit, Howdy? Because your name is How to Die. Like you even spell it How Die, right? Anyway, he loved it. But another thing that I just wanted to ask you about actually before I pull one more thing up is have you ever looked into the alleged Albert Pike letter written in the 1800s?
About World War III, yes, if that's what
Yes,
you're
about
referring to.
he called all the wars, right? And so whenever we talk about camel toe and all that, it's interesting how like belittled she's being, with everything. And I love honestly just the mind fuck that everybody's going through on being told that gender isn't a thing. And now they have to like be proud that the first woman president, so you'll be able to ask people, oh, so what's your definition, right? And the
Also,
springs are
what is
just going to
black?
pop. I love it. Yeah, I love it. But the Albert Pike thing is fascinating because Trump, I recently had a guy named Steve Falconer on, and in the afterthought, it's this bonus thing that we do for the Value Exchange audience on Patreon. Sign up, guys. It's fascinating. If anything, go sign up for that one and then quit. That's fine. But in that, we talked about the Albert Pike letter, and he broke down sort of everything. I mean, down to the cutting of the right ear is the highest initiation order or an initiation into the highest satanic priesthood order, cutting of the right. And then he talked about, the breakdown of the. All of it's fake, obviously, and we know this. But also, MAGA is the highest level of the satanic priesthood. So it's fascinating when we tie this again to Israel and is real, and we're starting to break down etymologies of these things. The Albert Pike thing I just thought was fascinating because, as Steve mentions in there, Trump was really phrased as and positioned as an anti-war president, going to meet with the, little Un or whatever, and then, the things that he did by moving Jerusalem or the capital to Jerusalem. All of these things, it's very peace. Time president, right? But maybe, that's to get him in there for the second time, and then that's when the Albert Pike letter gets really interesting at that point. What did you think about that, Ryan?
I've considered the Albert Pike letter quite a bit recently because since I've been talking so much about the Abrahamic faiths with the Olympics or with the geopolitics of the day. And I mean, I just see, especially after last weekend with the riots in the UK, although they've been ongoing, they got really bad recently, this last week or week and a half. And what I see is I see a group of people that I don't believe are Muslim. Some of them are Muslim, some of them are extremists, but I see a group of people wearing black masks, black hoods, black shirts, black pants. They're dressed like Antifa. They're not dressed like Muslim men, whether they're faithful to the religion or not. They're dressed like Antifa, but they're pretending to be Muslims. In the same way that I've seen at college campuses in the US, I've seen people with headscarves on have the headscarves removed when they're arrested and they have yarmulkes on their head. It's
Don't
like
they
a
call those agent provocateurs?
agent provocateurs, yeah, and I think that's what we're seeing. So, and considering that HIAS, I believe that's how you pronounce it, it's spelled HIAS, is a Jewish group that has, like, I think it goes back to World War II, and they're facilitating a lot of the illegal immigration, probably legal too, but mostly illegal immigration. It makes me think that there is a force that is, well, on one hand, Jewish, that is driving conflict between Christianity and Islam. There are Islamic factions driving conflict between Christianity and Judaism. There are Christian factions and so on and so forth. And all these religions, the major religions in the West, are being played off against each other. And as I believe, if I'm remembering this correctly, because I don't have the letter in front of me, the gist of that letter is that there will be a one world religion erected on the ashes of the old world once all religions are brought into conflict with one another. And then all of them are destroyed. And that's what I see. And I see Christians that have no, sadly, no, I see some that do, a lot of my listeners do, but a lot of Christians that have no ability to remove themselves from the breast of Israel. They are completely latched on. They think that if they don't support Israel, they're going to go to hell. I had a guy tell me he would slit his throat to protect a Jew. I was like, what are you talking
But
about? Yeah,
they're
what does
as
that
innocent as a
mean?
lamb. I mean, you have
Yeah,
to, right? It's
because
been
they
into
are
your
real.
psyche. This well, is dude, the NLP right here.
I've never heard this one that you're showing on screen right now, the Rael thing, but I mean, I think a lot of our listeners have heard of Is Rael as Isis, Ra, and El, which are combining three different fucking religions. I don't know if that's the etymology of it. It's just an interesting anecdote to say Is Isis, Ra, and El, combining all of it, that works, right? I mean, it works for some people, I guess.
It's at the very least synchronistic or metaphysical. I mean, right. you could look at a lot of things. I mean, if you look at, there's a goddess of illusions called Medea, I think is how you pronounce her name.
Yeah.
But that's like media, right?
Or pharmacopoeia means sorcery. I mean,
Etymologically, that's not even like a maybe. That is 100% where pharmacology comes from. And then you have others that aren't, it's not a matter of interpretation. It's literal. The goddess Nike, the goddess of victory. And every person you see that wears a Nike logo, they are, whether they're aware of it or not, which I assume most of them are not, they are worshiping the goddess Nike. And if you're an athlete, what do you want to do? You want to win.
And you got the Saturn swoosh, the ring on the Saturn, the Nike swoosh. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think all of this is? It's the same thing with corporate logos. It's the same thing. I mean, the thing I've been telling people recently, I always try to figure out exactly, because I don't really have a box. I can't say I'm this, I'm that. Like, I practice Shintoism and I love reading. Those are kind of identities in a way, but they're not really identities. They're kind of like just ways of living. But I've been telling people recently that the only way I can describe what I feel is I just use the word anthropology because it compares different cultures and languages. And I think it's an anthropological view on the, like kind of an occult anthropological view. And my goal is to show, not to argue one point or another, but to show that there are all of these parallels and similarities between religions and cultures and languages and customs and practices, not to drive a wedge between people, but to hopefully lift the wedge up and show most people that, hey, like it, you might not believe the same exact thing, but you do have a lot in common with a Muslim if you're a Christian. And
right. The same thing happened with the documentary Zeitgeist. I brought it up a million times where that was one of the first things in the early 2000s that popped. I mean, because our listeners know I grew up super Christian, but when I watched Zeitgeist, I was like, wait a minute. I had no idea about these other religions and how fucking close they are to this exact story. And they came thousands of years before the story of the Bible. I know there's a lot of that that's been, I don't know, debunked or whatever, refuted.
Some of it's inaccurate, but some of it's very accurate.
Right, but in general, a lot of these stories overlap each other so much that you can't deny that it all is kind of the same story in different languages, translated differently, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that at all. I mean, it depends on what element we're talking about. Like, for example, if you look at Zeitgeist and they say Horus was the personification of the sun. Yes and no, he was and he wasn't. It is true he was a sun god. But Horus is more like Apollo. He's a derivative of the sun.
Ra was more the sun god, right?
Correct. So Ra would be the Egyptian version of Helios, the actual sun. But then
which is Greek.
Which is Greek, yes. And there's different versions of the sun. So in the morning you have, and I don't speak ancient Egyptian, so I don't know how to pronounce it, but Khepri, the morning sun, Ra, the afternoon sun, and then you have Timu, which is like, you know, the Chinese company Timu. It's spelled the same way, right? And I believe,
and it's the worst of the suns.
It is, and it's also orange, like Timu, the company, right? So Timu or Temu or Amen, but the confusion. There's a lot of confusion because there's so many versions of these different characters. Like Horus is Zeitgeist is right. Horus is the movie. Horus is associated with the morning sun. And Set is associated with the evening sun. Although the evening sun is Temu or Amen, as in Amen Ra, Horus and Set are associated with the morning.
But Set is also kind of identified as the adversary, aka Satan or something like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, because the setting sun brings about darkness and the black sun. And I mean, the thing is, you'd have to read like this book. I'll show you. For people on video, this is just one example. If you really want to understand this stuff, I don't fully understand it. But if you read Budge, who was probably one of the foremost Egyptian authorities, as a British scholar. But this is a really good book that describes the different aspects of the Egyptian, like their religion was unbelievably complex.
For the audio listeners, what was that called? From fetish to
Yes, From Fetish to God in Ancient Egypt by E.A. Wallace Budge. I mean, you can get this book for like probably $5
Nice.
online. It's a cheap book, but it's packed with good info. But he explains the diff he the, all the hieroglyphics are in here. He was, again, the expert on all this stuff. He describes the different aspects of the Egyptian religion. So the point was, though, Zeitgeist is accurate and it's also inaccurate. And but generally speaking, it's accurate. And Christians are also incorrect in their assessment that it's all kind of made up and it's all the devil's work and they're just exaggerating. But then Christians are also accurate in the sense that some of the stuff in Zeitgeist is not entirely accurate. So it's not that that's the thing. It's not really about being right or wrong. It's about, I think, being more accurate, more correct. And when you look at, like, for example, if you look at the story, my favorite story outside of Egypt is Amaterasu, the goddess of Japan. Sun goddess. There's no doubt this is a sun metaphor. She's a sun goddess. She comes down to earth. She's in the tomb for 3 days. Then people outside the tomb perform a dance. They excite her, bring her back to life. She comes out of the tomb, big shining rays of sun. And then she ascends back into the sky and she calms the chaos of her brother Susanu and she calms the darkness that was there because her light was gone. And then she ascends back into the heavens. I mean, there's no doubt that that's a metaphor for the sun. It's very clear. She's the sun goddess. So you see that, and you're like, that's definitely where that comes from. But there are aspects of the Jesus story that I think are more related to, there's a parallel here, but it's more related to the shamanic practice, which is similar to the sun because the shamans go into the cave. They're there for about an amount of time. They go into an altered state of consciousness using an ayahuasca or some other substance. They have spears thrust in their side, like Jesus on the cross, or like Odin on the tree, or like Saint Sebastian. And then they come out of the cave. They bring wisdom and knowledge back to their people. And then eventually they ascend and die as the old sages. And then they're with their people forever. I mean, it's the same story. And those
Right.
stories are 40, 50,000 years old. And we find evidence of them on the cave walls in Spain and other parts of the world, Indonesia. So it's, yeah, it's both the sun, it's shamanism, it's a bunch of different things. Just back to your point about Zeitgeist. I will go on and on about this stuff, so
Oh yeah.
please
No,
stop.
are you familiar with the book The Lost Art of Resurrection? I'm not looking it up right now. I'm
Freddy
trying
Silva.
to. Maybe, but I read that book a couple years ago, and it's the same kind of idea, kind of a shamanistic approach to, and he kind of goes over the Egyptian, arts of basically practicing to die. And you
Yeah.
look, it's the same thing now with, hipsters talking about taking ayahuasca and having an ego death and all this stuff. The practice was basically like, you're going to experience death before you die so that you know what to expect when you actually die. So it's not a surprise and you're not like, oh shit, what is this?
And then
And I
you're
guess the
born again.
idea was to move you on instead of being, grounded to this plane or whatever their beliefs are. The idea does mirror the story of Jesus and a lot of other things where they're doing this shamanistic, like spirit quest type of thing where they're dying to themselves, being reborn, and then seeing things they didn't see before. You
Yeah.
can do that, I think, without actually dying. But once you do die, it doesn't mean you know everything. You just might be like, oh shit, a lot of that stuff was true.
That's why the Egyptian Book of the Dead, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and many others were very heavily focused on, the process of the afterlife, and they give detailed descriptions. In fact, in the South American versions of these stories is almost identical, like the underworld of Xibalba and other places. It's very similar to the Egyptian story, very similar to the Tibetan story. So you've got like North and South America, identical to Africa and the Middle East, identical to the Far East. Like there's clearly a link here. And it doesn't have to be, ancient spaceships and planes flying around, or even, ocean faring vessels, even though those ex the Phoenicians were masters of the ocean and others. They found massive ocean-faring boats in Egypt next to the pyramid. It could just be that, like, no matter where we are in the world, apparently, and I've never done these substances, but apparently, if you take DMT synthetically, like in the Dr. Rick Strassman study in the 90s in New Mexico, or you take ayahuasca in the right setting, you see the same thing everybody else sees. It doesn't matter if you're in a small island up around Japan, or if you're in the middle of the jungle in South America. You take that substance, you might have a different experience, but generally speaking, you see kind of the same thing. You see
Or in a
therianthropic
yurt in Los
beings,
Angeles. Yeah,
or
you
you're in
can.
Los Angeles, you're going to see therianthropes. You're going to see the mother ayahuasca, the serpent on the tree, which is very Edenic. you're gonna have the same types of experience. Some people have different experiences, but you see generally the same things.
It's yeah, universal. And so kind of like before we get out of here, kind of rounding it out, I loved what you said about, and this is kind of bringing it back to the beginning, but what you were saying about how hard it is to put you in a box because I would say all three of us here tonight are kind of free floaters. We're just looking at everything and kind of being, I'm not, you know, grounding myself on any of these things. I lean more towards some things than others, but for people to come out and try to think they know what you're all about just means that they only know one thing and they're putting you in that thing and that's it. And like I said at the beginning too, I know our listeners know exactly what we're about, or most of them at least, and they're not going to even wonder what the context is. But how would you put this for somebody who, I don't know, the casual listener, maybe somebody who just started listening to this kind of crazy shit, how would you put that to them? How to not label somebody when that is human nature, is to be like, oh, you think this? That means you think this also, and this other thing, and these, all these other things that might necessarily not have anything to do with what you think. You just think this one thing. It's a long-winded way of saying, how do you approach these people? Because one last thing, our friend Charlie Robinson over at Macrogressions has the best approach to this.
Charlie.
He's great. I got to meet him in person several times. I slapped his ass last time. He loved it. What his approach is when people call you homophobic or xenophobic or all the phobics or the anti-whatever, I'm more in line with this now than ever, is when somebody says that, you say, yeah, sure, okay, now what? It completely disarms them because they don't know how to respond.
You're not on the defensive.
Exactly. If you're taking away the self-defense, it takes away any perceived power they have by calling you this name. So when you don't have to defend yourself, especially, it doesn't even matter if it's true or not. If somebody's saying, oh, you're homophobic and transphobic and blah, 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 if you just go, okay, sure, yeah, now what? They don't know how to proceed because they can't think past the name calling. So it's a great way to be.
Supposed to give them power.
Right.
To give them power. Right?
So that would be my answer to that. What is yours? Is it about the same?
Well, I've heard Charlie say that before, and I think that that's probably a mature way. I think there's two mature ways, and then there's a slightly immature way to do it, but it's still a logical way. So I think that it's a mature thing to act that way and strip that person's offensive capabilities away without being rude or nasty, to just be like, okay, and what's your point?
The power of okay. Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
I say I can't be heterosexual or homophobic because I sun gaze every morning, you know?
what I've done, it depends on the situation, but like I do this a lot to prove a point. When someone says, you're an anti-Semite, I look at them and I say, you know, I think you're an anti-Gentile. If someone says, you know, you're racist, I say, well, I think you're racist. You're judging me based on the color of my
skin. So it's more of like a no, you are, but what am I?
Yeah.
But I like that. Blue situation. I like
but,
it.
But, yes. But it's also logical too, right? It's like, if you don't agree with me, you must be anti-Semitic. It's like, well, you might be anti-Gentile. Are you anti-Goyim? Is this something like that? Because it's kind of smart ass. That's how.
No, I like that though, because if somebody calls you anti-Semitic, just tell them you think they're a Nazi. And when they say why, you say, why do you think I'm an anti-Semite?
Yeah. You
can go rounds.
That's another one to do. Yeah, exactly. You can do that. Someone, when I worked at a co-op in New York, someone said, you're a Nazi, because I wouldn't wear a mask. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm not a National Socialist, and I don't support Bernie Sanders. And they went, whoa, what do you mean? I said, well, Nazism means National Socialism. I'm not a National Socialist. And they had no idea what to say. So it's another version of...
That's what I mean. They can't think past the name calling because they don't even know what it means. So they parrot this shit out thinking it's going to shut you down. So if you just stand your ground and say, okay, sure, yeah, now what are you?
Yeah.
Or you know, define what you just said about me.
So there's that way to do it. I do on my show. I always take a hyper logical approach, but recently I've been telling people, not because I'm fighting with people, just I want my audience to have a better idea of what my assessment of everything is. I really just tell people anthropology, because it's the study of everything, humanity, human behavior, biology, culture, society, linguistics, And I'm just trying to study all that. You can call me whatever name you want to call me. You know, if you listen for 20 minutes, you'll agree. You might listen for 20 more minutes and disagree, and then listen for another 5 minutes and agree again. We're going to compare and contrast everything because when we do that, we'll be able to, hopefully, we'll be able to find that we have a lot more in common than we have that are different. But if you really want to be a pain in the ass, then yeah, you're anti-Gentile, and I think you're the racist. We'll just turn it around. I don't know. That's the way, the three ways, but I like Charlie's way too.
No, and I love it because turning it around, my wife, who's not here tonight, it sucks, but she's usually here, and she tells me that I turn a mirror on people where I flip it on them and make them look at themselves for a little bit. And that's happened with YouTube trolls, emails, everything else. So I encourage people, if you disagree, please do hit me up. Just know, if you send me, Ryan, or Brandon an email that's just ba ba ba, you're this and that, ba and bye, I'm not going to even read it or respond. If you have a thought out, you know, critical, logical argument to make, I will read it and I will respond. If you're just going to be every YouTube troll and come up into the comments and say, you're wrong, I don't like it, I'm not going to acknowledge that at all. That's stupid. Like, we have long form discussions here for a reason, because it takes a long time to articulate what we're talking about, not three words in a YouTube comment, okay?
Yeah,
Just so we clear that up.
that's fair too. I would add one other thing is that you listened to that show I did about the mayor and the female predator paradox, and
Right.
I think I spent the last half hour in that show talking about, oh, I know, I was trying to think of what exact how I exactly explain it, but this is another way that I personally look at it. You know, when it comes to a lot of females, you have no power over me if I don't want something out of you. I'm sorry, I don't want to have sex with you. You have no power over me. And I don't get offended, or I don't get defensive, I should say, when you call me a sexist, because I know the definition of that word. You clearly don't. You judging me because I'm a man saying something you don't like actually proves that you're sexist. So we can play that game.
Mansplaining.
But then there's also the men. It's like people telling me, well, yeah, well, you know, I got a bigger truck than you, kind of an attitude. I genuinely do not care. I don't, I'm not competing with men either. And what most men compete for are resources so they can get women. And if I'm not looking for that woman and I'm not looking to compete with men, then you really have nothing on me. So
Right.
that's kind of the way that I look at it.
I love that you brought that up, because I forgot about that bit. But that was one of my favorite parts, when you're talking about not competing with other men and also not competing for women's attention. You have no power over me. It's the
No
same thing as
power.
we were talking about with people calling you names or whatever. It's like, you have no power over me because I own who I am. So, first of all, wench on Instagram, I'm not trying to fuck you, so I don't give a fuck what you think. And also, dude with the truck with the balls hanging off the back, don't care what you think either, because I'm not trying to be all about that. So when you, and people hate that. I wanted to bring that up earlier too. People fucking hate that. So you know you're going to be hated, right? And you're fine with that. I think
Yeah.
we all are at this point. I'm fine with that.
You
Be
can learn to
hate
live with
me.
it.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Well, especially when I'm sitting here and I'm like, you know, I could take a book and be like, well, I'm not saying I believe everything in this book, but it does say right here what I said because I'm just referencing the book, right? And I don't care if you believe it or not because I didn't write the book and because I don't believe necessarily what I'm reading. I'm just simply referencing another source of information. So I don't really give a damn one way or the other if you believe me, if you trust me, or if you trust the author of the book. I'm just showing you the source where I got the information. Now, when we find another 50 sources that say the same thing, maybe we're a little bit closer to the truth. And if you ch still choose not to believe it, it's not my problem. It's just information. It's just neutral, raw information, whatever that subject matter might be. We just hold this. So, I mean, you guys know this. Just there's so many double standards. There's double standards for men. There's double standards for women. There's double standards for Jews. There's double standards for Christians. There's double standards for Republicans. There's double standards for Democrats. I get sick and tired of it. How about we just hold a singular standard? You either act in a civil, decent way and you can communicate as a civil, decent human being, or you're just an asshole. It doesn't matter what color you are, what your belief system is, how you vote, or how special you think you are because you have one of a thousand different variations of the rainbow flag. It, you know, whatever the case might be, you don't have any authority or power over me. That's the way that I look at it.
That's how it used to be. You could call someone a fag and it didn't mean you suck dick or anything. It just meant stop being a douchebag. That's it.
Yeah,
someone told me, they said, you know, I'm going because I'm going to Japan very soon. And someone said, you know, that a lot of the Japanese people, they like Westerners, but if you go to the rural areas, they might be pretty racist against you. And I said, yeah, probably. And they said,
Oh
you're not.
no.
He said, you're not going to be offended if someone says, oh, you have round eyes. I'd be like, if someone said I had round eyes, I would think that was the funniest damn
Dude,
thing
my
I have heard in a
coworker
long
says
time.
that to me, my Asian coworker.
You
I
have
know
round
brought it up
eyes.
on the show because I'd walk up to him and squint my eyes and be like, oh, hello. And
And
that's
he
how we
does the.
became friends. No, he'd hold them wide open and be like, hey, round eye. I'm like, see, we're
Yeah,
best
it's
friends.
so funny. It's so
Isn't that
funny.
how e isn't that
And
easy? It's so
yeah.
easy to be friends.
And it disarms you in those situations. And I mean, one of my favorite South Park episodes is the volleyball one where with the Chinese guys are like, hey, let me do my impression of American. I think I'll put it on my credit card.
Oh, look at me. I'm in debt and I pay
Yes.
bills. Yeah.
Do you have any non-dairy creamer? It's funny.
It's fucking great.
I
I
love
love the
Asian
whites.
racism.
Dude, the white stereotypes, honky, cracker, all the things where we smell like wet dog. I'm like, all of them are fucking true. That's why
So
it's
true.
funny. So why don't you recognize it on the other side too, and we make fun of everybody else? I don't get it. Well, dude, we'll wrap up here though. And Brandon, do you have any words of wisdom to outro us with?
Well, kind of, but they're not going to be mine. Okay. It's a joke from Eric Hollerbach. Have you guys ever heard of him?
No, I have not.
All right. So Eric was on the Glenn Beck show. He called in as his character, Klaus Schwab Jr. And I am just going to play a little bit of this. It's going to reference the Nazi stuff we were talking about earlier. Can you guys
Was
hear
it
this?
your father or was it your grandfather that was a Nazi?
Labels. Labels. Okay. Labels. The National Socialist Party. Oh, you look back during COVID time. Oh, you're Democrat. This, you're evil. You know what I mean? It's like, first of all, my great-great-uncle Helmut actually died from Auschwitz. People do not know this.
Really? Died
Yes.
in Auschwitz?
Yes, he was on some of the gypsies escaped, and so he was making installation of electric fence, and his foot was in muddy puddle, and he was electrocuted.
And that's a pretty tragic family story then, really.
Oh, he was a great man.
Yeah. Who knew you had so much in common with the
So
with the
this
Jews?
is Eric Hollerbach's character that he plays, and it's absolutely hilarious. Would love to give this guy a shout out as well. He's a phenomenal comedian and just a dear friend. Eric Hollerbach, holla, buddy.
That is
But
hilarious.
I
I
love
love
it
it.
because people then who say you're anti-Semitic, you can be like, you grab his joke and just flip it out on people in normal everyday life and go, no, my grandfather fucking died at Auschwitz, dude. And then they would just get silent and say,
Yeah.
yeah, some gypsies got out. He was, you know, outstretching the electric fence, his foot, you know, stepped in a puddle and just gone grandpa. That's hilarious. Like, absolutely hilarious, right? So just shout out Eric
Objectively funny.
Hollerbach. I know. And Ryan, dude, this is a blast, man. I really enjoyed this. And Joe, bottom of my heart, man, as always, thank you.
Always love you, sexy beast. And check out everything, Brandon, at expandingrealitypodcast.com. It's longer than I remember. Is it? Well, say it
Yeah,
again.
spinningrealitypodcast.com. It's where you got the books, you
Okay.
got the events, and you got the show. That's right.
Oh yeah, all that stuff. And
Oh,
Ryan,
yeah.
reference all your shit, anything you've got coming up or any, specific shows you want people to check out.
Yeah, I would just encourage people to visit my website. It's pretty antiquated intentionally. I like to keep things really simple. I don't really do video either. My show's all old school radio Monday through Friday. So just visit my website, www.thesecretteachings.info. There is a free archive where you can search the name of the show plus Ryan Gable, my name, on pretty much any platform. But if you go to the website, there's links to Apple, Spreaker, everything I've linked up there, so you don't have to go searching for it. I've written a handful of books. You go to the website, they are cheaper. They are digital or physical. My main book is called Occult Arcana. It's about some of the stuff we discussed tonight, but it's a massive occult encyclopedia. Otherwise, my show airs Monday through Friday on Ground Zero Radio, but you can listen to it anytime on the website or anywhere else you listen to radio shows or podcasts just by searching The Secret Teachings. And you can type in Ryan Gable as well. Last thing is my email. And if you want to contact me directly, the email is tstradio@protonmail.com, or there's a backup, rdgable, Gable, GABLE, at Yahoo. Abel.com. Thank you guys so much for having me. This was fun. We should not wait two more years to do this again.
Hell, obviously. And awesome. if you buy a book from his website, he actually signatures it in his own blood. So that's bonus. Oh, I found out about 5 minutes.
Nice. Nah. We're on blood, saliva, and a bunch of other stuff. Yeah.
We're gonna do the whole Aleister Crowley on this shit. Yeah. All the what are they, light cakes, I think cake they were called. But, cake of light. Nope.
Yeah, every the jizz on there? Yeah, but it was ran through an anus first. Oh, okay. That's what the additional stamp.
And a sieve, so it was nice and, you know, right. Anyway. Okay, we'll be done with this. But anyway, just so you know, everybody, we are not racist.
Never!
But thanks, everybody, for listening on YouTube. If our page is still up at this point, I don't know. But if you're listening on YouTube, Rockfin, or audio, we thank you all. And send your submissions for the intro, because I want to hear all your fucking beautiful voices, okay? All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.
Thank you for listening to Legit Bad. Please address all content grievances to gofuckyourself@yourmom.com. See you next week.
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, oh.